Hey everyone, welcome back to But Why the Podcast, the podcast where me, Matt, Kate, and Adrian look at the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? But before we get started, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you listen. And if you want to support us more, come check out our Patreon at patreon.com/butwhythoughPC. Enjoy!
Welcome back to But Why Though the Podcast, and today we are talking about the Netflix animated series, BoJack Horseman. As always, I'm your host, Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And Jason Flatt is our special guest today.
Hi. Yeah, that's me. I'm here.
Why don't you tell people where they can find you at the moment?
Find me, you know, roaming around. I don't know, I feel like same places you find Matt, like on the internet. At one point I had a podcast. I don't really do that anymore, but you can follow me on Twitter, I guess, you know, @_u. I say funny things sometimes, people like it. I write for RetroZap. I do that too.
There's something.
I write about movies and comic books and other random things that I think about, video games occasionally.
All the pop culture things.
He's living that retired podcast life.
Yeah, you know, I'm collecting my pension, living large.
Does that just mean you don't lose money now?
Well, no, I still have the domain name for another, like, 8 months, so. Oh. Just have to remember to cancel it next year.
Okay, so Matt will be leading this episode today, so I'm handing over the anthropomorphic horse reins to him.
Yes, and so today we're going to talk about BoJack Horseman, and I guess we, as always, we start with a question and or two, and my question for you guys are, have you ever seen BoJack, and I guess, are you a fan of the TV show?
Can I start? Because I really want to
say something.
I don't
care. Who starts?
Back in the 90s, I was on a very famous TV show.
That's not what I was expecting to start with, but okay.
No, it has really great music. but yeah, no, I have binged all of BoJack Horseman. I'm kind of watching some episodes selectively right now before the new season comes out. I love it. And I am a fan of the quote-unquote TV show, both in the show and the show itself. I think that the characters are very, very relatable. Don't know how much that says about me, but they're extremely relatable. But yeah, that's me. That's where I fall on it.
I'll go next. I do want to say, I always love how Matt's questions are just always straightforward. Like, you like this? Cool.
It's really all the information he ever needs.
Yeah, it's all the information he ever needs. And even, like, when Kate tries to, you know, do a more in-depth question, it always just goes back to, I like this thing. This is how long I've liked this thing. So he even defaults to his own.
Or, I don't like this thing. Back in my day, it was this way.
Yeah, here's exactly. My resume on what I know or what I don't know, and that's all you need to know.
It's harder to quantify emotions. A yes, no, you can just one or zero. Then you gotta, like, figure out a 5-point scale for, do you like this, do you not? Like,
what version of that thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of BoJack Horseman. I've watched all of the show as well. I'll probably be doing a rewatch before the next season comes out. So, I mean, I don't know if there's really much of this in. I'm sure we'll get into kind of like why I like the show a little bit later. But yeah, I'm a big fan.
Awesome, awesome. And now time for our guest. We brought you on here for a reason. Tell us why.
Big fan. I've never seen BoJack Horseman, but I've watched the show. I'd like to meet him someday. Big fan. I really, back in the 80s, he was my hero. I watched the whole thing for the first time last year. I think in like the spring. I thought that it was the stupidest show ever when I first heard about it when it first came out, because I was like, what is this dumb animated show about talking animals? That can't possibly be good. That's like, it's not usually my kind of humor. Like, I don't like the, like, you know, Family Guy, like, South Park kind of comedy animated shows. And I thought this was in that kind of vein. But then I watched it on a total whim. I don't even remember why. And I was like, wait, no, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I watched the whole thing in like 3 days, the four seasons that were out at the time. And then I've been rewatching it the last few days in preparation for talking about it and for a new season coming out. And I discovered there was a Christmas special also. Didn't know that. Just watched that 10 minutes ago. And, you know, it's some good stuff.
So I'm like with you, Jason. Like, I actually, when it first was announced and everything, I was like, this looks stupid and I'm never going to watch this probably. And I didn't really care for it. And then I think it ended up being one of the times where I was like, I need something to go to bed. And as everybody knows on Netflix, they pretty much removed a lot of their stuff, or at least a lot of stuff that I used to watch to go to sleep to. And so I was like, well, I don't have anything thing. I'm just going to throw it on here. And then started throwing it on here, I realized it started out a little slow, which we'll kind of get into. And then after like, while like the end of the like started kicking up in the first season, I was like, this show's amazing. And then I pretty much kind of like, you watch the entire thing in like a few days.
I think that if I had watched the first season like when it came out, I wouldn't have enjoyed it. Like, if I only watched just the one season and not continued after that. And I think I literally just like saw someone say on Twitter like, BoJack Horseman season 4, oh my god, like, this is the best show ever. And someone was probably talking about why it was good. And I was like, wait, I didn't know that was what this show's about. And then I watched it. But the first season, like you just said, is like, it's a little slower. They make a lot of really like jokes that make me uncomfortable in the way that if I didn't understand the rest of the context of the show, I'd be like, why are you making Holocaust jokes? That's not funny. But like, understanding that it's not because they think it's funny. It's because of the character, like, and who BoJack is, like, that makes it uncomfortable in the way that it's supposed to make you uncomfortable and not in an inappropriate way. So I would have hated it if I just watched that, but coming to know purpose of the show, I'm like, oh, I'm uncomfortable and I like it.
Yeah. I'm like kind of like with what you said, like there's a lot of it where like it's super cringy, but it's supposed to be, and it's never about like it's like the opposite of like Family Guy or South Park humor. Like, it's not just there to be there. Like, it's all telling you about the character himself, kind of like how Archer is. Like, Archer is extremely offensive, but none of those jokes are supposed to be glorified. It's to show you just how crappy those characters are, and give more insight to it.
Yeah, so before we like decide to take the whole show off right now in our introduction, let's get into like something about the show. But, so I'll give a little quick synopsis about the show. Obviously, it's American adult animated comedy / drama, I guess, whatever that exactly means. Netflix original show that takes place in Hollywood. And I just wanted to say that because somebody stole the D to give to his wife as a romantic gesture. it revolves around a washed-up 1990s sitcom star who just wants to make it back to relevancy. Basically, BoJack Horseman. It's in an alternate world where normal people and, as we kind of mentioned, anthropomorphic animals living together. It's kind of weird how they do it, but I think they do a really good job of it because you never know whether you're going to get a human or just like a frog. But they all seem to take on their characteristics. As far as like the main character, BoJack Horseman, I just kind of wanted to say this because we kind of brought up a little bit of like touching thing. Probably the best quote I found of like description of him. So obviously this is not my description, this is the best one I found. Basically, BoJack Horseman's a self-loathing alcoholic horse currently in his 50s whose acting career peaked when he starred in a successful 90s family sitcom called Horsin' Around. Though he began as a young, bright-eyed actor, he has since grown bitter, deeply depressed, and jaded towards Hollywood, and who he has become post-fame. BoJack has been shown to be caring and insightful, but his insecurities, loneliness, and desperate need for approval often result in self-destructive actions that devastate those around him.
So basically, he's real.
Yes.
Yes. So the majority of 50s Hollywood stars.
Yeah. About as real as you can get there. But I really enjoyed that description of him, so I wanted to say it. So a quick background on the show. Obviously, it started in 2014. It's still running. It was created by Raphael. Is that how you spell Raphael?
Raphael,
yeah. Raphael Bob Watzkeberg?
Waxberg.
Waxberg. And he basically a younger guy in his 30s. He was basically the son of some Russian Jewish immigrants who immigrated to the U.S. And then he also has ADHD, so he kind of like knows like going through like when it comes to a lot of his writing and stuff. And in March, he actually signed a deal to do another show on Amazon called Undone, which is supposed to be about to do the same genre.
So it's going to break your heart and make you laugh at the same time.
Yeah. Another tidbit about the show, the illustrator Lisa Hanawalt, I don't know how to pronounce. Sorry about these
last.
Hanawalt basically inspired his drawing to create BoJack, and he basically hired her to be the show production designer and producer. So he basically hung out with an illustrator while doing a class. It premiered, it premiered in 2014. Has 4 seasons with 49 episodes. Season 5 premieres September 14th, 2018. So it'll be the following week after this episode is released. The main cast consists of Will Arnett, who plays BoJack Horseman, Allison Brie, who plays Diane.
Nguyen.
Huh?
Diane Nguyen.
Diane Nguyen. Amy Sedaris, who plays Princess Carolyn. Aaron Paul, who plays Todd Chavez. And Paul F. Tompkins?
Yes, Paul F. Tompkins.
Who plays Mr. Peanut Butter, and yes, that is one word. And as far as its rating-wise, it's got an 8.5 on IMDb, and it basically states it's anywhere between the 137th to the 211th rated show of all time, depending on how they do that, their weird system of they're all rated the same way.
It's also only been out for 4 years, so give it some time to climb up those charts.
Yeah, so basically
I would say, like, even like in the scope of like all of the TV shows that have ever been existed ever, like 137 for 4 years is still pretty good, I think, for a Netflix animated TV show. Like, I think that's pretty good, even as it stands.
So weird. You put it that way. Pretty pleasant.
Yeah, I think it actually says it's 211, but it has the same rating as the 137. So I don't know how they like, okay. December. Yeah,
yeah. However many number difference that is, way tie.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's like tied.
Wonder where it compares to Horse
and Norman. Tied.
Yeah.
Definitely higher than the BoJack Horseman show.
Or Secretariat.
Awards, it actually won 8 various awards, with 4 of them being Best Animated Series in its 4 years. But as we said before, kind of remember this is an animated Netflix show, and therefore it kind of, besides like House of Cards and Orange and the New Black, nothing really like wins for Netflix.
Yeah, and also like now at this point, award shows and like award academies and like whoever, like the voting people, really don't like that Netflix is producing the content it is, and usually tends to tank their stuff or ask that they not be included. So,
yeah,
that's why that
for 8.
That's why the Defenders got such a bad review.
It's
the Academy's fault.
You throw. I was like, I don't remember if we gave that. Such
no. In general, the Academy tanked it. It's all their fault.
I think it has a 38th percentile.
Oh yeah,
as far as like, it's one of the worst rated like Netflix shows.
Yeah.
No, that might be Iron Fist.
But I'm sure it was the critics' fault and not Iron Fist at all.
No. But so yeah, that's pretty much a brief summary of the actual show itself. And so I just kind of wanted to go over, give a little logistics on it, and I don't know if there's anything that anybody would like to add to that brief little summary.
Well, I just think, I mean, the only thing that I think that just the last 3 seasons are just like super highly rated, like. Probably some of the highest that you're going to see for anime or a TV show in general, but like definitely like an adult animated TV show, especially since there's so many of them out now. Like you said, like in the beginning, that first season kind of hurt it a little bit, but like the rest of it being in like in the 90s and 100s, like it's just crazy, super super crazy.
Yeah,
and it's also really good to see like people love it and like it is rated highly, because like. Everything about the show, like Jason mentioned, everything makes me uncomfortable. Like, I didn't want to watch it because I hate that animation. Like, the animation itself makes me uncomfortable. But it all works. Which, like, just to see that it actually has, like, that wide appeal with such, like, targeted content, like, inside. Like, it seems like something that wouldn't you know, reach a whole bunch unless we're all just very depressed millennials and we're keeping it afloat, which is a possibility.
I just feel like I don't know anyone that's like watched the entire show and not said, yeah, it's really great. Like plenty of people start it and don't like it at first and don't continue, or they're like, nah, it's not for me, which is like very understandable. But I don't know anyone that's watched all four seasons and not enjoyed watching it, which I guess is like kind of self-fulfilling, because if you're going to watch the whole thing, of course you like it. But also, then again, people watch stuff that they hate. And so
it's just... Oh, I definitely hate watching.
Most people are just like, anyone that I know that's watched it is like, they really enjoy it when they actually get past the first few episodes.
I also think like the subject matter is just too heavy for you to watch if you don't like it.
Yeah.
Which I know Matt will cover.
So speaking of the whole first part, which I was going to bring up a little bit later, but might as well now. That first season, like I looked up like the ratings, as you said, Adrian. Yeah. So the very like first six episodes, which even I kind of was like, I didn't really get it at first watching it. Between Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes, the season one is 53 on Metacritic and then like a 62 on Rotten Tomatoes. And then if you add like the last three seasons, season 2, 3, and 4, as you mentioned, basically it's Metacritic scores of 90, 89, 87, and Rotten Tomatoes scores of 100, 197.
Yeah, so it's crazy that it even got a second season. Like, what gets a 60% on like Metacritic and gets a second season?
Wait, it's got hundreds for some of its seasons?
Oh, yeah. Season 2 and season 3 are 100. And season 4 is a 97.
That's
insane.
Yeah, actually, basically, as much as it is, basically the first like 6 or 7 episodes, people really do not seem to like, especially critics, but the last, like, I guess it's 3 or 6 episodes.
It got into its groove.
Yeah, basically, people really enjoyed, and that's which kind of leads to the whole Netflix thing, which I guess we'll talk about when we get to the But Why Those here in a second, but the way they do their shows versus regular TV.
Yeah.
So before we get to the But Why Those anything, we need to talk about...
OP Live!
OP Live.
OP Live.
OP Live. We live for OP Live.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, so if you have not heard it on our other episodes, we are going to be at OP Live September 22nd and 23rd in Dallas, Texas, Irving to be exact. We are invited guests there, so we'll be streaming from the convention floor as well as doing a whole bunch of other stuff with the con. So at this moment, we are running a giveaway for 2 free tickets to the convention. If you're in the Dallas, Texas area or looking to take a nice little road trip, make sure you head on over to all of our social media. You can find us under the handle ButWhyThoughPC on everything and find out how you can win that giveaway. And, listen to this real quick.
What happens when the hunter becomes the hunted? OP Live Dallas is excited to introduce the Bounty Royale Brawl featuring Fortnite on September 23rd. OP Live attendees will get the chance to face off against members from our invited pro teams and aim for a spot in the final overpowered round.
Okay, now that we're back now, let's get into some of the But Why Those for BoJack Horseman. And we kind of touched on it a little bit, but it's basically a successful franchise. It's won awards, it's highly rated, it's got 5 seasons, which apparently, I mean, that's actually pretty impressive itself. I know people don't think about it, but there's actually quite a few shows that get canceled.
And it's surprisingly good for a Netflix show, because Netflix shows have kind of proven to go out at around 3, even if people love them. Yeah. So
as far as like why it's unique and successful, it's the only animated Netflix show to ever win an award. And I think only F is for Family is the only one else that I could find that was nominated for anything.
Oh, I love F is for Family.
But, I mean, there could be other ones, but at least
the
from what
Race
I look,
to Dragon's Edge was robbed, damn it.
I don't know if there's other shows, because there's so many, but just from a quick search of various award shows, I'm not going to go find somebody that held an award show in the garage. But
guys, we should do a DreamWorks award show episode.
Do it. Yo, Disenchantment, yeah, definitely going to win an award.
Can we really, though?
It's also highly ranked on a lot of anime TV lists. IndieWire had it ranked in 2007 as the number one show of the 21st century for like animated TV shows. It's also set to become the first Netflix show to come to cable TV, as Comedy Central bought the exclusive quote-unquote TV rights, and the series will quote-unquote premiere through syndication on September 26th of 2018.
That's really insane, because I can't actually think of anything that's really done that. Like, not even just TV show-wise, but, like, movie-wise and stuff like that. especially, like, so, like, it's common with, like, international releases, but, like, here, that's pretty big.
What, to go from Netflix to TV?
Yeah. Oh.
What? Yeah, no, like, I thought Netflix ruins everything, and they can't make good things that people on TV want to watch.
Well, apparently people love BoJack, that more people need to see it.
No, that's
which is actually weird how you break it down, because I think they said Netflix in 2017 actually has more subscribers than large cable companies these days.
Well, but duh.
But barely, though. That's not including, like, broadcast TV, which is not a thing.
Well, the fact that they're even up there, though, is really big, because for the longest time, like, and I've kind of said it to you, and it's one of the things, is like, oh, it's another service that you have to buy, so it's a paywall factor. But and it has less than, I guess, what cable would offer. But I think just, like, we live in a world of convenience, so it's been able to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, for, really, like, cool. Considering, like, watch The Simpsons or even Family Guy, you just need some bunny ears.
Yeah.
And a lot of those.
Well, but that's what I mean, because, like, if they get to that, like, to that height, like, that's just big. Because, like, even if you do just need bunny ears or you can't afford, like, cable or anything like that, like, I think ultimately, like, Netflix, if you only have Netflix, not other subscription services, but just Netflix, it's cheaper than cable. It's more doable.
Right. As soon as you throw CBS All Access in there, though, you're broke.
Yeah.
now if they could do, if they could, this is like BoJack going on to cable is like the reverse Star Trek Discovery, you know?
Oh,
now the
is.
People can actually watch it instead of the rest of us all who live in America not being able to watch this show, unlike, you know,
yep.
the rest of the world. CBS, if you're listening, you're doing it wrong.
I co-sign that.
Yeah, I was
CBS one though.
I was looking at just for Emmys alone, right? Since Emmys is like the big thing, so BoJack Horseman and F is for Family are the only animated things on Netflix to even be nominated for outstanding yep. voiceover performance. So that's really it.
And I love both those shows.
I yeah. can't believe that Clone Wars season 6 was never nominated. The Jar Jar and Mace Windu episodes. I mean, come on, that's like. That's television gold.
Oh my gosh!
See, this is why we brought Jason.
Nah, it would win the popular category. Now.
Yeah. So now, from moving to successful things, we can talk about why this show really matters. Basically, kind of what we've been talking about: the broad spectrum of everybody. Oh, it's relatable. It does this, does that. Now we get to actually talk about how it's relatable in that form. And so the first thing we're going to talk about is kind of the show kind of gets a little political with some of the episodes. Well, put it this way, they have dedicated... Well, I'm not going to say every episode, but when they go all the way. Put it that much. Yeah. And so we'll give quite a few of the examples, and then we can go through in there. We have basically the gun debate episode with the lovely thoughts and prayers.
And way too relevant right now.
Well, that's basically what they talk about in that entire episode.
You know.
If we wait around until it's relevant, then nothing will ever get done.
Yeah.
Basically, you have women using guns with Diane when she gets to find when she decides to shoot one and she wants to take over a gun.
God.
I don't know if you guys would like to talk to these by shows, or do you want me to list them all and then go through them?
I mean, I would like to talk about them as they come up, just because they're like, what do you call it? They're all kind of separate in their own categories, and some are more political and more just like cultural issues, and not necessarily issues, but just existing.
Right. So here, before we do that, I'll set what happened. So basically, in the Thoughts and Prayers episode, essentially they're trying to make a movie, and then in a production movie about to release it, and then there's a shooting, and so they said we can't release the movie, it's poor timing, and then they wait to try to do something else, and then another shooting happens, so they can't do it, and the whole time they basically just keep saying thoughts and prayers, and the whole point is basically, if we keep waiting around saying, oh, no, you can't have the timing, well, you're never going to have timing because it just keeps happening over and over again. As far as the women using guns, Diane decides she wants to be a concealed carry. She ends up being a concealed carry, does everything. She finally, they want to talk about the guns right. Advocates basically find out that women, she promotes women using guns. They find out about it. I think a woman ends up shooting a guy trying to harass her. And so they end up going to court where she's like, well, we should be able to protect ourselves, you know, and that isn't what you guys all want. And then they come to realize that, oh, we'd rather no one have guns than women have guns.
Yeah. Because it's essentially, like, what it ends up being is, like, she goes, like, the reason, like, she's chosen to kind of do it, like also involving the gender aspect, but because, like, in the show, she's, like, as ultra-liberal as you can get. Like, every stereotype there is for a liberal is, like, pretty much what Diane is. And so it's kind of, like, this big, like, shift in her character. And, like, I mean, like, ultimately, like, I just really liked it because it talked about, like, the commodities that build up around them and build up around tragedy. And the fact that, like, the reason it's called Thoughts and Prayers is because every time they get a notification that something's happened, they spend a minute just saying, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, and then they move on, which is extremely numbing and relevant and, like, really accurate. It's a really well-done episode, and, like, sadly, what happened in Jacksonville, I saw a lot of people kind of posting that, like, this is what I see you, like, politicians doing, just saying thoughts and prayers.
I mean, we had this episode planned things way before that happened, but yeah, it's one of did those with that. Yeah. Stuff.
Anybody else want to talk that isn't me?
The thing with it, too, is, like, Diane's not a, like, a lot of times in TV you have, like a caricature of a liberal feminist character, and, like, she's not a caricature of that, she just genuinely is. No. We're, like, you know, especially, I forget which episode, but, like, very, very, very early on in, like, one of the first few episodes, she goes on this whole, like, I was going to say rant, but rant has a connotation that's not correct, because it's, like, she just dropped knowledge, like, real hard, and it's really great. Yeah. And, like, you know, when, like, you're set from the beginning that, like, no, she, like, genuinely is an intelligent and thoughtful and knowledgeable person who has opinions based on lots of research and facts and studying and reading. And so, like, in this whole episode and conversation, what I just think about is how, like, even as somebody who is armed with as much knowledge and as much genuine passion and genuine, like, capacity as she is, it's still, when topics like this come up, we're all rendered, like, what do we do? And the whole episode is just like, why do we all have the wherewithal and have the understanding that awful things happen in the world around us, but yet we still just sit here and do literally nothing and move on the next day?
And I think that's, like, a really good point too, because, like, I do think that, like, pieces of her are a caricature, like, just from my own positionality, like, looking at her. But I think the way this show does it, they don't do it to make fun of feminism or make fun of somebody who has these ideals. Yeah. What they do is they use it to kind of tell the story, because, like, she exists in, like, that world is very literally taking on what happens in our world and trying to make dark humor come of it. And so when they put her in situations like this, it kind of, like, the right side is just as shown. It's kind of like you said, like, it's, I'm trying to figure out how to say it. Like, when the show puts them into, like, situations that are heavy, it shows that nobody, like you said, nobody is doing anything. And ultimately, like, everybody, like, whatever you think or whatever you've thought just kind of goes out the window, and you're, like, running on this, like, base, like, first thing you think is what you're saying type thing. And it happens in multiple points in the show, when stuff happens. And in a way, it's kind of real, because when you get into a debate with somebody, like, as much as, or, like, when something happens close to you, you do kind of, you can be somebody who's extremely educated on issues, and, like, sometimes emotion takes over, and that's something that I think the show does well. Because at all other points, she does drop knowledge, and I'm like, yeah, that's accurate. And, like, the show, like, acknowledges that some of these things are accurate, but then it also shows how a lot of them can be, like, taken to, like, the far edge. I say, as a liberal feminist,
yeah, you
who's also a woman of color.
Well, technically, like, I Diane. Think she is too.
Yeah, that's what I said, like Diane, even though she's voiced by a white,
which kind of leads to. Which kind of leads to the next part of, which also involved Diane, is basically, does Diane decide to announce she's having an abortion on Twitter, but she runs the social media for HIPAA client and does it on the wrong Twitter account, which apparently a lot of people have done these days with announcing that, and then the hip hop client decide to have a fake abortion to embrace it, and then has some of the most weird, cringy songs, videos,
yeah,
to promote this.
Gosh, I forgot about that episode.
I did too until I was doing these notes, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how bad.
Yeah, I don't know how to handle this episode.
But it also basically goes, she does it as a kind of revolt to promote, like, it turns from a social issue to literally this client basically runs off and turns it into a promotion of her, like, line.
Yeah, which what happens a lot. I mean, and it's something that I've seen happening just, like, with just social media activism in general. Like, it, you take an issue that is real and real people go through and live and make choices, and then it ends up getting turned into, like, a fucking Pepsi commercial with Kendall Jenner. Like, it's just what happens, and I think it did well at showcasing that. And I think that the agency they gave Diane, like, lets it kind of, like, this entire show, when it comes to comedy and, like, heavy subjects, it just ultimately gives the characters this kind of agency that you understand what they're doing and you kind of understand their perspectives, and it doesn't belittle what's happening or what the big situation they've thrown them into is. But yeah, it was that's a weird episode.
Which then leads to basically she ends up, because of playing, ends up getting herself pregnant and then becomes pro pregnancy or to have the child because it had the ratings.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah, like she switches from being pro-choice to being pro-birth, and it's just, like, it's really weird and really fast, and I mean, and that's ultimately, like, when it comes to any type of social media activism, a lot of the times done by celebrities usually ends up just, like, changing with the tide, because it's really easy to say that you're doing stuff now in the Twitter world, and, yeah, it's, again, eerily accurate. And just, like,
Yeah, I think that the show can easily be confused for being, like, intentionally and directly nihilistic and existential when, like, or more nihilistic. It is existential, but, like,
yeah,
being confused for purposely being, like, there is no point to anything and let's not, and nothing matters and let's just move on with our lives because nothing matters. But, like, that's like the opposite of what the show is actually trying to say. And it's the fact that,
yeah,
well, the but why though that we haven't got into yet, that's last, but about, like, the whole point of the show is that everything matters, and, like, the fact that,
yeah,
we're just all caught in this awful cycle of manic and then depression, and then manic, and then depression, and so everything it matters a whole lot for a really short amount of time, and then we're literally just rendered incapable of caring about it because we're so overloaded with so many things that are just such tremendous amounts of pressure. And it's like, you could think based on the dark comedy and based on everything that it's like, the whole point is la-di-da, nothing matters, but, like, you're definitely mistaken if that's where you land on it.
So we'll quickly go to the next one. Basically, they talk about, like, Bill Cosby, but they have, basically, they end up signing up, and they end up having BoJack and Diane, when they go on tour, have to basically answer questions about the comedic legend Hank Hippopotamus.
Hippopotamus.
He's a giant hippo.
Full of so many great plays on words.
Yes. Yeah. But they go through all of that situation as well, especially with some of this. It also came out, this was referring basically mainly to Bill Cosby, but this also came out before of all the other allegations for other various people.
Yeah, this was before the time of Me Too and Time's Up.
I really
yeah.
wonder if they're going to do something with that next season. I'm sure they will.
You know yeah. they're going to.
It's like impossible for them not to in a show about Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then the last one, which is kind of like the first that I think from what I've seen, like the first that's really ever been discussed or actually gone into, at least on TV that I can see anything, was asexuality.
Yeah, and this is like why I said, like, it's not necessarily political issues or like social issues. It's just kind of something that like exists as a representation spectrum.
Yeah, they kind of call them, yeah. But basically Todd is like apparently asexual per mm-hmm. se. And so they dive into the states in which he actually, like, states in the show going, I'm not gay. I mean, I don't think I am, but I don't think I'm straight either. I don't know what I am. I think I might be nothing.
Yeah.
And so they actually have, I mean, obviously he ends up in that weird, whatever cult-like thing.
Yeah, he does end up joining a cult.
over that, but they do kind of delve into that, and that's definitely, like, I mean, that's obviously out of my realm, but it is something they do touch on, and they kind of go into that. It's something that's been pretty unique compared to, like, pretty much anything else that I can think of on TV.
I mean, and I think it's, like, really good to point out too, is, like, when it comes to LGBTQ plus issues, like, a lot of the time, like, nobody really acknowledges asexuality on that spectrum. Like, during Pride Month, there were a lot of asexual people on, or people who identify as being asexual on Twitter, kind of talking about how, like, in a lot of spaces they end up getting pushed out of them because of this. And that's kind of what Todd goes, that is what Todd goes through. And I mean, granted, he joins an improv comedy cult.
That's what the cult was. I couldn't remember what the cult was. I kept wanting to say a magic cult, but I knew it wasn't magic.
But it does resolve itself. Obviously, spoilers for BoJack Horseman. We probably should have said that in the beginning.
At this point, if you haven't seen it, you're a little late.
But when I say that, you say not to say spoilers.
It's been over a year and it's on Netflix.
Fine. But yeah, I mean, I do think that the conversations they have with him, I'm not asexual and I'm not LGBT, so, like, ultimately, like, conversations around, like, sexuality that isn't heterosexual, like, I don't have the perspective to speak from. But just, like, when they, listening to it from the outside of that, I feel that in the conversations that Todd has, like what Matt just mentioned, I think they do give it that weight of somebody trying to find themselves, which I think Todd goes through.
Yeah, I can't really speak from, obviously, that either. I just wanted to say it because, like I said, it is unique to what we've seen on TV that's not been delved into from something else.
Yeah. And I also just want to, like, just restate, not saying that being asexual is political or anything. It's just, like, I feel there weren't really other places to put it.
Oh, I just put it in with that. So before we go into basically the wonderful campaign and how that stuff, does anybody have anything else on those heavy-hitting topics there?
Nah.
Yeah. So another thing that came up in this one kind of thing was Mr. Peanut Butter's governor campaign, which was almost an entire season of, like, disgrace. And it kind of delves into celebrities being in politics and popularity contests, his incompetence and really has no idea about politics, lobbyists in politics as his ex-wife's his manager, and just basically tries to collect all the money from lobbyist, and he's really just a puppet or puppy. And like, they even go into the point where, like, a wacky bill gets passed. Like, they literally change the entire system just to make sure he's able to get, like, he don't even need signatures to even run or win in the first place. It shows him and Diane fight on their views, because we talked about Diane being on one way. And then it leads to...
And Mr. Peanut Butter not even truly being the other way. He's just doing it because he knows it's going to get him the popular stuff.
Yes, which is kind of like I was going to say.
Relevant. Cough,
like,
cough.
The main one was basically this whole fracking thing where he was, like, pro-fracking, even though he didn't know what fracking really was in general.
Who would do that?
Todd ends up signing a... Huh?
Who would ever do that, you know?
Science commission.
You know, yeah. picking opinions based on what other people's opinions are.
So he was kind of pro-fracking, didn't really know what fracking was. Then all of a sudden he ends up having to show his support for fracking because Todd signs a bill, and they end up fracking his whole property in some weird thing, which then actually collapses his entire house.
It's not some weird thing. Diane says, if you have no problem with fracking, frack the house. And then he agrees to frack the house, and that's what happens.
Well, Todd ends up signing the ability to, without reading it, that basically allows him to frack down.
Hey, people tried to secede from the state of New York over fracking. They straight up, a few miles from where I went to school, people had lots of gas under their land and owned way too much of it. And so they all really, really wished they lived in Pennsylvania so they could sell their land for that sweet gas money. But they lived in New York, and Cuomo, the governor of New York, is like, no, you can't set the air on fire and ruin the water and other scientific things. And
we're not Texas.
And they were like, fine, we're going to secede from New York. They had no success. They did not secede. If they ever do, have me back on for an update video. And I'll...
Which actually lead to them all collapsing with him and his supporters at a campaign-like rally in a sinkhole. The actual governor of Woodchuck, who is a woodchuck, is there. He actually is very smart and competent and shows leadership, but apparently people don't want to listen to that. They want to listen to the celebrity. And
I
he
thought, I thought the person he was running against was the elephant.
No.
No, he was running against the woodchuck, and they kept, like, slamming him for his hands and stuff. Never mind. And his hands...
Well, yeah, which we'll get to the hands.
He can't dig... Okay, yeah, never mind.
Which actually lead to... Basically, Mr. Peanut Butter wants more food, because Mr. Woodchuck's being smart and rationing up the food, lead to a mob rule, and they tie him up to a fan. He actually crushes his hands, saving people, withdraws from the race after he finally... And then he ends up in the race against Man-Eater Jessica Biel.
Which is my favorite thing, by the way.
Which then,
especially if you watch Blade Trinity.
Yes, which then lead to, as Adrian said, the huge debate over hands and how they're, instead of actual ideas and policies, there's a lot to go dive into. That's just basically a run-up. And then I guess we can go with the aftermath of, after all the craziness, everything, Woodchuck finally wins or whatever, gets put back and things are quote-unquote restored. But during the short time that Mr. Peanut Butter had control, he literally built a bridge to Hawaii, and just shows how basically when things get ridiculous, they can still have a long-term effect, and now they had a pointless dumb bridge to Hawaii.
Look how beautiful.
Yeah, all it takes is one...
Yeah.
Like, all it takes is one stupid decision that's made law, and everybody suffers for it.
Yeah. There's this whole campaign. Too relevant. There's a lot to dive into. I said,
I'm just kind of like, how political we get in here.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to necessarily think, but it is nice that they did this whole entire thing. I think they did a great job of showing all of this in the first place.
I think that the most genius part of the entire thing is that I'm extraordinarily politically active and aware, and like, that's what I like, what I do with my life, and I somehow managed not to see the parallel at all between this season of the show and the real world. And like, maybe that's shame on me, but also I think that's just the genius of the show in the first place, and how it just showed that literally all of what goes on in politics right these days just goes over almost everyone's heads and we don't even notice it. And pretty sad. I don't know. I didn't realize this at all until I literally read your notes and went, oh my gosh, the hands. Wow.
Yeah.
Where was I when I watched that? Too engrossed in myself and how sad I was watching all of the A-plot.
Yeah, so a lot of this stuff is actually like going around in the background, which is crazy because you have all this stuff because we haven't even mentioned BoJack. Like, this is supposed to be a BoJack Horseman, and we don't even mention BoJack. We haven't got to there yet. But yeah, so like... I think that what they try to do portray, they do very well is this is a common theme, whether it's relevant now, but just in general history of, like, people are just used to seeing this happen over and over again while we've had celebrities elected governors. Even before, like, president or anything, we had governors, we had mayors, we have other elected officials, and, like, just people don't really care because it ends up being what it is.
But I mean, too, like, beyond that, ultimately, like... It's funny because the show is super absurd, and when you explain it, it sounds super absurd. But then when you actually think, like, what the crap show the 2016 election ended up being, and the debates that were had, and what was said in the debates, and how topics changed so frequently and for no reason, and how the winner had no idea about so many of the policies and still doesn't. Like, it seems absurd when you watch the show because it is doing absurd things, but that is, like, the reality of things also, which hurts a bit because it's like, there's no way this would happen. And it's like, well, it may not be a bridge to Hawaii.
Well,
but you
know,
next trade war with
next
China.
Infrastructure week. Yes. That might be what we get.
Yep. So it, yeah, it's way too damn relevant. And it's funny too, because like in the whole thing, Peanut Butter doesn't actually believe any of this. He's doing it because people are telling him to.
Well, yeah, but that's what they did with his ex-wife.
Yeah.
Actually, two ex-wives of Jessica Biel, Maneater, and obviously the other one.
Yeah.
Who ends up being his manager, who then takes over for Jessica Biel because she was like, you all want to get paid? And she's like, yes, I do. I'm like, let's run for mayor.
Yeah.
Or governor, I mean.
Yeah, it's just, it sucks. It sucks. I'm getting depressed doing this episode. I need some alcohol. This should have been a drinking episode.
No.
Yes.
So, now with all of that aside, let's get why we're really here, and probably the main but why those... as much as those are important, like why people this show is really touted and lauded and people love this show is basically it's been described as one of the best and most honest depictions of depression. So when the show starts out, you get this like washed up star who does a lot of drugs, drinks a lot, meaningless sex, every celebrity type thing. I mean, how many people are going to see OD on something at this point?
Yeah.
And we're supposed to be like, it's okay.
I don't know, celebrities are always about saving the environment, and BoJack doesn't care about
that. Yeah, right. Yeah. Always.
Isn't there a Leonardo DiCaprio equivalent in BoJack?
I think there was.
There was.
I'm pretty sure there was.
That's who I was thinking of. He's the only celebrity.
Oh, wait, no, it was actually DiCaprio. That's right.
Yeah, no, there's a Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, as the show goes on and you progress to the show, you start to see that these are just vices and he's really just a sad, depressed horse. And it depicts his depression and addiction to things and problems kind of just beyond the surface. We kind of mentioned like all vague and like it talks speak to a lot of people because you don't just see like the normal like, oh, drinking, whatever. It kind of shows deep down like how broken he is, and they have episodes dedicated to certain parts of depression that he goes through and just certain things he does throughout here. Like, basically, Diane writes a ghost memoir. He basically...
Ghost writes,
my bad. Diane ghost writes his memoir. He ghost writes the ghost...
Writes a ghost memoir, and ghost writes his memoir are two different things, Matt.
Jason said if I can make up words, and I can like put them in any order.
It'll be a ghost memoir soon enough.
Yes.
That's a biography.
Diane ghostwrites his memoir and basically tells and shows
if it's published. If it's published post, yeah, that word. Then it'll be a ghost memoir. But for now, it's ghostwritten by Diane.
Yes. Diane ghostwrites his memoir and basically tells and shows how broken he is, and this like jumpstarts his career for a bit, and as the season and show continues, you realize it's only temporary, and he starts to realize that he's just that broken. He actually, in season 3, tells Diane, basically, he goes on basically saying how he's broken, and basically he's made of poison. He's like, I have poison inside me, and I destroy everything I touch.
Yeah, and I think that this is one of the things that's really beautifully nuanced about the show, is when you're watching it, you realize that BoJack is self-sabotaging everything. But it shows you from his perspective that he doesn't see that. And there are moments of clarity when he sees that that's what he's doing and he's still incapable of stopping. And, like, that is, like, I don't know, it's really, really potent to see. Because it shows you that depression from multiple angles. And, like, it's not necessarily that he's, like, he's broken and that's why he's doing those things. But he also, like, refuses to not be broken. In this, like, weird way?
Well, it kind of starts out that way. And I think as you get into, like, by season 3, especially into season 4, I think he finally, like, just takes on the identity of, like, I am broken and accepts things.
Yeah.
He's trying to change, but it's obviously not doing.
Which is the other cool thing, because it's like, he doesn't try to change and overnight, oh, he's happy, he's not depressed anymore. It's
well, I mean, like, he kind of starts with that a little bit, but...
Well, but he tries, but, like, and they show why that isn't a thing.
Yes.
Like, they like, it shows you, and then explains why that doesn't just happen. Like, there's that episode where he's trying to go outside and run, and it's like, yeah, I'm sorry, just picking up a sport isn't going to make you not depressed.
That's the thesis of the entire show, is that constantly he thinks, if I can just do this thing, then I'll stop.
Yes.
Yep.
Then I won't be miserable anymore. And whether that's if I can just, you know, be working again, or just get the approval of Herb or his mother, or if I can just, like, start listening to these audiobooks that tell me that I can change, or if I can just be a good father, or just reconnect with the kids that were on my show, or literally, you know, every single thing is, if I can just do this, then I'll be better. And that's the constant lesson that he can't get himself to learn, is that there's not a single thing that's going to make him feel any better. And that to me is the absolute realest part of it all, is like, that's what I do to myself constantly, is I say, if I can just do this one thing, then I'll start feeling better. I won't be depressed anymore. I won't hate myself, you know, it's no matter how much you know that's true, no matter how many times I can tell myself that, no matter how many times BoJack can tell himself that he knows that that's not the reality, he still falls into it repeatedly every time, because that's the viciousness of depression. And like it kind of touches on, like, there's the idea of the deserving and the undeserving blank, where a lot of times people who don't attempt to understand the intricacies of whether it's mental health in this instance or literally, you know, anything, that you will say, oh well, you know, he's making all these mistakes, he's, if he just wasn't a jerk to the Navy SEAL, or if he just wasn't, you know, if he would just, if he
I
would
love that episode.
That was an amazing
that's actually
episode.
The second episode of the show too, which is like, if you can get past the first one and watch that one, you're gonna really enjoy the show. But like,
that's what kept me going.
If he would just be a good friend to Mr. Peanut Butter like he is to him, like if he would just not have been stupid to Diane a thousand times, like all these things, if he would treat anyone correctly, like, but like it's not his fault, like there's choices he can make, but it's also like his brain is not allowing him to make the right choices all the time, and you have to figure out how to balance like blaming yourself and knowing that you have utility, and how much is like accepting that you're not 100% at fault.
Which he even kind of does, because it goes from like the short terms, like if I just do this one thing, to where he goes on like the depression thing of like revival, or I'm going to like restart my entire thing. He literally just picks up and drives off, and he's gone for an entire year and moved to the desert to try to find his long lost love.
So I wouldn't say that that's so much him saying that I'm going to get better, so much as him saying I'm going to run from all the problems I have caused.
Well, I'm not saying like go better, but it was like a revival of like I'm just going to restart everything.
If I can just go what's her name, the deer, I will be better now.
If I can fix this one thing that happened so long ago.
Like,
and it's also like almost self-sabotaging to even go on that quest because of how distant it was.
Right.
Like how, like, it was a fool's errand, ultimately.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was one of those, like, it starts with, oh, I can go run, to, like, oh, I can, like, maybe get a part in a play, to, like, I'm just going to go move in the desert and find somebody.
Yeah. Which is, like, there are extremes that happen. And I think that's one of the things that I really appreciate from the show, too, is that, like, when they talk about, like, when they showcase depression, is, like, one, depression isn't just being sad. Two, you're not depressed in the same way all the time. Three, it looks different in different people. And even if you're one person having depressive episodes, like, that looks very differently from day to day sometimes. And, like, BoJack has these underlying things that he continues to do. But ultimately, they show him actively living with his depression, doing good and having small things happen around him, to being completely consumed by it. And they showcase the depression in different types of ways, and they definitely show it as being more than just a sadness, which I usually really hate the way television shows talk about depression or any sort of mental health issue, because they just take the surface piece. And like, I would say that, like, which is why it's a but why though that you put Matt, like, it really explores depression.
Yeah, a lot of a big thing about well representing depression, aside in addition to the things that we've discussed, is that depression is often coupled with anxiety, and that you don't know that unless you know that most of the time. And like, for a lot of people, one or the other might present more than the other, but like, there's definitely several episodes of the show where you can see that, like, when BoJack is starting to be able to do things quote unquote right, and like be treating Todd better, and like be making decisions that are healthier, things like that, that he starts to get anxious about the decisions he's making. And am I making the right choices now? Can I keep this up? Am I like, and that's when you start to spiral back into you've made mistakes, and now you feel really regretful about them and hate yourself for it. And that's like the other side of it that I feel like it's not just about being sad. Exactly. Like you don't get that representation very often and very well. And the fact that you can see that he's a much more dynamic character than just I'm sad all the time and make dumb choices. It's sometimes I start to feel better and then I feel bad about feeling better and don't know how to cope with that.
Which kind of lead to the, like, one of the best things where they do the episode Stupid Piece of Shit, which basically follows BoJack inside of his head and all of his decision making and it, like, what he is thinking and as he does everything. I mean, the show literally starts off with basically Piece of Shit, Stupid Piece of Shit, You're Real Stupid Piece of Shit, But I Know I'm a Piece of Shit. That at least makes me better than all the other pieces of shit that don't know they're a piece of shit. Or is it worse?
That is the anxiety part of it.
That
too.
Episode is exactly
that's definitely the purest example of it.
Yeah, and then like that's one of the really cool things is by going into his head, like they do showcase like the different things. It's like it's not just like I think a lot of people think that depression is just like waking up and just deciding not to do something, but like when I've had depressive episodes, it's just like, no, I think about doing that thing 100 times over. And then by the time I know the time's passed to actually do the thing, because I've been in my head and being really anxious about doing the thing, that I've missed the thing, and okay, well, I'm just going to sit in bed because the thing is gone.
Or that it keeps getting closer and closer, and the closer it gets, the more I know I need to do it, and the more I know I need to do it, the less I can make a decision about how I'll do it, and when I'll do it, and in what way I'll do it, and with whom I will do it, and all of these things, then it's passed, and now I hate myself because it's passed, and I did it wrong.
Exactly. And then it's a circle.
Okay.
But it also shows, like, as much as you guys talk about the thinking, your thinking also shows about the impulses of doing anything, where basically he throws his mom, who's suffering from dementia, which we'll get into right after this, his mom's doll off his balcony, and you hear in his head going, him saying, do it, and he just throws it, and then immediately after going, you're a piece of shit asshole. Yep. And, like, he spends the rest of the night, like, I need to go find this doll.
Yeah.
No matter what.
And I'd be lying if I said that I've never had that happen.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I do it all the time.
Yeah, the hyperfixation on a single thing that will fix it all, but it doesn't fix it because that's not how helping yourself works. BoJack, go to therapy.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, because there's definitely been times, too, where, like, I've said something, and in my head I'm like, don't say that, don't say that, don't say that. Oh, fuck, I said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, definitely from leading to season 4, and then obviously between all of this, like, thinking and mental aspect, you see a lot of drug use. They go on a binge with this Sarah Lynn, who's like,
oh gosh, Sarah Lynn. I forgot about Sarah Lynn.
That's such a messed up situation that he did not help at all.
No.
Yeah.
No. So Sarah Lynn was basically a child actor who ends up, like, having a rough time with drugs. She finally gets clean. And then basically BoJack shows up in one of his things, says, let's go on a bender. And they go on a bender for a week, and she ends up dying.
Yeah, I think that was, like, the episode that first hit me where I was like, I'm inconsolable.
Yeah.
On a slightly brighter note, for just a moment so we can have some levity, what I really like about some of these episodes where they show, like, the one where they go on the bender, or the one where you're in his head, or, like, a lot of the... A lot of the ones where they're the most, like, inside characters' heads is when they do really cool stuff with the art, where they, like, totally change it up, like, with these really different styles that are just, like, you know, whatever you feel about the main art style, the fact that they're juxtaposing it with these, like, either really psychedelic, weird things or just, like, really just different styles makes you go, that's really fun, and, like, it kind of makes it a little easier to swallow some of the ridiculously difficult moments.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of my favorite things about the show. I don't want to take away from, like, all the depression talk and stuff, but, like, since we're on, like, the art, I think the art stuff that they do just by putting, like, little things in the background, like, for you to notice, kind of, like, gives you a small chuckle when stuff like benders are going on, or, like, abortion talks are happening. Like, they just sprinkle stuff throughout. Like, if you saw something in season 1, you might see it in season 5. Like, so it makes you pay attention to kind of everything and just not have... I mean, we talked about it, like, right now. Like, this whole show just isn't surface level, and then it even comes down to the art. Like, there's things in the background happening that can inform all what's going on in the foreground. So I just think that's just something that I don't think a show... As much as, like, I like Family Guy and, you know, Futurama and stuff like that, like, I don't think they have that for them the way that BoJack Horseman does.
Yeah, because even the opening changes.
Yeah, I was like,
right?
I was gonna say the opening changes as the story moves and progresses, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, I didn't realize that till
and
this
a lot of work as an animator. Yeah,
because that was one of the first things I noticed. It's like, oh, as the story progresses, like the basically, I think especially after season 1, especially leading into the season 2, 3, and 4, the openings, like, change with the thing. Especially when, like, BoJack's gone, I don't even know if he's even in the opening.
Yeah, and I will say this too, like, I feel like the the question should have been, like, who's your favorite character for the beginning? Because, like, there's that episode where you're inside Princess Carolyn's head, and, like, outside of just depression,
yes,
getting to understand, like, that type. Because, like, Princess Carolyn has her own issues and her own mental health issues.
They
and,
all
like,
do.
For me, yeah, yeah, they all do. Much. But, like, when they're in Princess Carolyn's head, because in the show, she's represented as being, like, the most put-together character out of everybody. And then actually getting to her head and seeing everything that goes through that. Minus the child who is playing an adult. Oh but that was also her just desperately wanting to be loved. Like,
well,
I don't know.
I mean, they do a good job of that because they show her as an overworked, basically, single woman. What?
I forgot what? About the
you, yeah!
What?
Mr. Man?
Mr. Man! So good! We didn't even talk about his depression problems.
I mean, he's just, you know, doing business with the
he's just company. Doing business.
He's just got a, you know, business.
Oh, God, and his voice.
Which kind of leads from her thing, because I know a lot of this was pointing toward BoJack and doing everything, but obviously we time constraints. I tried to limit it. But yes, Princess Carolyn kind of has the overworked, basically, single person. People keep asking her about her family, if she's ever going to be married, if she's ever going to have children. They show it through her eyes, like, one of her, like, great, like, what, grandchildren or something like that, if she were to have children.
With the necklace.
Yeah, with the necklace.
And then she wakes up and realizes it was just nothing, and she's alone, and she has her work. Which, like, for the longest time, before Matt came into my life, I very much thought I was going to be. Because, like, I think, like, that's something that really the show does well, too, in highlighting, because there's a lot of levity around a lot of characters and stuff, and as much as they show, like, the actresses, I think, get a lot of, like, screen time of just being, like, ditzy and just, like, stuff's given to them and stuff. And then you have Princess Carolyn, where it's like, no, like, everything she does, she, like, they show her having to work harder than almost everybody around her. And it's, like, the choices she has to make to, like, maintain that level of, you know, to keep climbing up and also just to, like, maintain what she's gotten. And just, like, dealing with that, which I really appreciate. And I think she's my favorite and most identifiable of the show, other than the stupid piece of shit episode. Because I watched that and I was like, oh, God, why is this episode attacking me right now?
Which leads into, like, even Diane goes through her own issues because she's actually marrying Peanut Butter, who's actually a rich celebrity and everything else. But she's, like, miserable with him.
Yeah.
And goes through her whole life crisis.
Because she's comfortable and she's nice and she can't say no to him.
Yeah. And she's like, do I be comfortable or do I try to live with my, what I, go do what I want?
Yeah. And then she also just doesn't believe that she deserves Peanut Butter being good to her, which she doesn't at the end, no. Given what she does.
She literally goes and goes to another country to avoid him and then pretends that she's still there.
Yep.
And then she comes back, doesn't tell him, runs into him at BoJack's restaurant. And then he's so stupid that he doesn't even know it's her.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
They all need to go to therapy.
Oh, side note and a happy note. My favorite cosplay that we saw at PAX East was actually somebody cosplaying Paul Giamatti playing BoJack Horseman. It was so good. I have a picture of that somewhere.
Which we kind of talked about, like, his friends and all, but you see all the shit and terrible things that, one, BoJack does to his friends, and then obviously his friend struggles.
Yeah.
And sometimes he does it on purpose, sometimes he does it incidental. He doesn't
and sometimes it's really not his fault.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes his friends
fuck him. Oh my gosh, yeah.
And it's very clear.
Well, that's why I hate Todd. I do not like Todd at all.
No, I love Todd.
Nope. I couldn't stand Todd.
He does get a lot of really bad advice, though. It's like,
yes,
you know, it's definitely one of those things where we surround ourselves with people who are similar to ourselves, where if we have trouble with depressive periods, then we probably are friends with a lot of people who also have the same problems. But then because we're all depressive, we really aren't able to provide each other with support necessarily all the time in a healthy way. Because if I'm feeling bad and you're feeling bad, well, I can't give you good advice because as soon as you feel bad, I feel bad too. And my advice is going to be really not great.
You feeling bad makes me feel even worse. And therefore I give you even worse
that's
advice.
Super realistic and totally what happens to them. Because especially in like season one, Diane gives him so much awful advice all the time. Because she also is miserable and can't actually give good advice.
And I think on, like, the Todd thing, I think Todd's, like, the opposite. I mean, not that Todd doesn't have problems. Like, he does. And not necessarily problems. But, like, he does have his own issues with his identity and where he fits in, like, almost everything, like, from season
one. So, to be fair, I didn't like Todd from season one before they even got into the identity thing.
Well, I wasn't saying, like, I'm just saying, like, he has his own issues.
And, like, obviously he, like, yells at BoJack for all, like, while he's trying to go through it. But he's like, I don't have time for your shit.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm talking about, like, I did not like Todd before any of that even happened. Because,
like, the part where he's probably the worst to BoJack is when he's dealing with his own stuff. But that's real.
Yeah.
Like, there have been a lot of times where, like, I've been dealing with something and I'm just not as empathetic as I should be. Or, like, because it's like, well, I'm going through my thing, I don't have this bandwidth to help you. And then, like, but I think Todd, on the other hand, is, like, where you have somebody like Diane, who is just what you said, we're both sad, so us giving each other tips on how to not be sad or depressed or angry is not gonna work because we're both having these emotions. I think Todd, on the other side, is somebody who just really doesn't see below the surface until he has to go through it himself. And I've had a lot of people like that in my life, where, like, they just don't really look beyond it. And that's kind of where Todd sits in a lot of the episodes until he has to go through something like that on his own.
Which kind of, like, the funny thing that Jason brought that up is, like, that's been kind of looked at and seen is, like, as bad as BoJack is, or even some of them are, whatnot, in the end, they are usually always there.
Yeah.
I think Todd also is just, like, he's often portrayed as being a victim of his own capriciousness and, like, being just a dummy and a goof. But he's also, I would say that he is in a degree of, like, an abusive relationship with BoJack, where, like, BoJack is constantly just putting him down and literally telling him what to do and think all of the time. And, like, that is basically the definition of how you characterize an abusive relationship. And Todd is trapped in it because, one, he has nowhere else to go and doesn't know what else to do with himself and his life, and where, like, he doesn't know anything else besides this relationship, basically. And he's also got, like, a lot of commitment to BoJack because he is his friend and he is someone that he cares about. And as, like, you know, I don't know if I'd classify him quite as a fixer, but he's, like, he definitely feels a sense of commitment to BoJack that is, like, utterly destructive to him. Like, he absolutely should leave.
He should really move out.
Like, he should definitely drop BoJack out of his life. It's really unhealthy for him.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of his ability to get better is probably tied to the fact that he is still in BoJack's orbit constantly.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads to kind of summarize all of this things up between all the thing. I think Todd says it the best of, you can't keep doing shitty things and then feel bad about yourself like it makes it okay. You need to be better. You are all the things that are wrong with you.
That's probably, like, one of my favorite lines in the entire show. And I may have or may have not dropped that into a Twitter conversation one time in a situation where somebody was being shitty.
Yeah, this is essentially what I told my kids today when they were slacking off in class today. Like, you can't keep doing shitty things and then expect the world not to think that our demographic is shitty if you're doing shitty things. Do better.
Yeah.
So when Todd first said this, I was like, all right, Todd's one of my favorite characters just because of this quote.
No, but definitely one of the, probably the lines that's used quite a bit.
Yeah, which I think that's one of the things that the show really showcases too, like with his friends and with that line. It's like a lot about it. Like, it's under, like, I think it goes, and it doesn't say it in explicit terms, but when you watch the show, you see that, one, things are a process, and two, nothing gets better if you don't do anything. So as much as you, like you said before, people can misinterpret it as being really nihilistic because nothing matters. But ultimately, I think what the show pushes you to do by watching these characters fail and do these things is it pushes you to do something because that's the only way it's going to matter. Because action means a hell of a lot more.
Positive actions.
Yeah, positive actions.
Which leads from his friends to his family, and we'll go into basically his mother.
I don't want to talk about his mom. This is awful. This is probably the worst I felt this entire episode is with his mom.
which is why you save it for the last, so you can all end on a down note.
That's Matt.
So basically you learn throughout the show he hates his mother. You learn why he hates his mother. You learn that she was basically a terrible mother. She treated him awful. You learn from his need to, like, approval and being special come from mother. I think they show a back flashback with mother basically saying you got to give the people what they want, even if it kills you, even if it empties you out until there's nothing left to empty. They give you, like, set the flashbacks, her being non-caring, horrible, devoid of affection. She ends up making Hollyhock sick by slipping her weight loss and her
coffee.
And her coffee every day. And you can tell that there's just been years and years of problems from
Question,
this.
Question, Matt.
And then, yes.
For our patrons who listen to our Little Prince review, who's worse, BoJack's mom or the mom in The Little Prince?
Well,
he has to think about it. That's the worst part.
Because I haven't got to the second part of the story yet, but it's definitely probably BoJack's mom.
Okay, just curious what your thoughts were.
BoJack's mom is physically and emotionally abusive. She's worse.
Yes.
Full stop.
But once you are ready to full on, we hate his mother, and we're glad that he threw her in an old home and forgot her in that prison. You learn through her dementia all of her problems in every single thing that's happened to her life and how BoJack was basically a reincarnation of her, but not as bad as what she went through.
I mean, and it shows, like, a cycle that, like, it's a cycle of abuse that just continues, which is a very real reality for a lot of people.
You basically learn that BoJack's mom, BoJack's grandma, was basically lobotomized, pretty much, because she wanted to live her life outside of being just a wife and have creative thoughts and do things.
Oh my god, BoJack's mom's dad, when he throws her stuff in the fire, I'm just like, oh, it hurts.
And so basically her mother's devoid of affection, her father obviously is not any better, she gets nothing, she's taught basically the same way she raised BoJack, a loveless type environment. You learn that BoJack's dad was basically abusive, cheated on her, pretty sure beat her.
Oh, he was definitely abusive.
You pretty much learn around this time, even you already knew that basically was non-existent to BoJack.
Think the wrong thing.
And while doing all this and learning this, you learn this through dementia.
Yeah, it's one of the saddest episodes of television I've ever seen.
In the episode Time Zero, they explore Beatrice, or BoJack's mom's, memories, but you see it, not only these depressing memories and learn about it, but you see it through the memory loss of dementia, as there, you can kind of understand the story and you see the bad parts, but they're missing pieces.
Yeah.
And, like, there's people with drawn out faces where you don't know who that is. It's kind of very convoluted.
And the memories blend into each other, too.
And you can see how even the most important events of somebody's life can be rewrite and jumbled together, and how something simple as just scribbling over somebody's face and you can't see it can leave out so much information. I know that was hard. You guys can have it from here.
I actually think just with what my grandfather went through, like, if you listen to, like, our Coco review on our Patreon, like, I kind of, like, open up about that. But, like, ultimately, like, I've seen dementia, like, turn somebody from the person. And not dementia, but, like, Alzheimer's. Like, there is a difference between dementia and Alzheimer's. It's just, like, a varying degree of severity. But, like, I've seen somebody change from the person you know to somebody that you don't recognize. And I've seen somebody struggle with having, like, trying to just recall what day it is, let alone trying to recall, like, their children's faces and stuff like that. And, like, it's funny because, like, it uses her dementia as, like, a plot point and, like, a point of comedy at times. And in this episode, it kind of pieces that all together. And you're like, holy fuck. Like, it wasn't funny. It was sad. And it just gets increasingly sad from that point. Especially with how BoJack treats her. But then again, you understand why he treats her that way because of what she's done to him. But then you understand why she treated him that way because of the awful things that were done to her. And, like, obviously, like, continuing a cycle of abuse is never right. But there are some things that you can't break. And I think specifically when you look at, like, BoJack's in his 50s, like, and when her, when his mom Beatrice was alive and everything like that, like, some cycles are, like, cycles are easier to break now in some ways than they were back in, like, our parents' or grandparents' eras and times, because you didn't have the ability to seek out the help to break them. Which, again, kind of just goes back to, like, the show highlighting, like, all the, like, the intricacies of mental health and avoiding it and just everything. And just, oh my god. This episode hurts. Why did it end on this?
It's extra hard, too, because it's like, you hate her, and you should. And it parallels, parallels a lot of, there's, like, a motif that comes up a whole bunch of times where BoJack really, really, really screws up and hurts somebody, like Herb Kazaz in the first season. Like, there's a whole thing where BoJack wants to be forgiven because he tries to apologize, and, like, Herb's like, no, I don't have to forgive you to move on with my life, and I don't want to give you the satisfaction of being forgiven because you don't deserve it. Now, and that happens to him several times. Now he's on the other side of it where he's in the position of, do I forgive her? Do I not forgive her? And it's like, what does he do? You know, he hates her and should hate,
like,
her.
What is the right? Yeah, what's the right answer?
Like, yeah, it's, I don't, there is none. It's like, ultimately, whatever he wants is what's right, because it's his life that was destroyed by her. But
ruined. Yeah.
It's like, oh, heavy.
I also just really like that episode with her, because I just like that answer. I don't need to forgive you to move on with my life. But I just like that take on forgiveness, because it's not something you usually get on shows.
There's no happy endings in this show.
Mm-mm. There has to be another But Why, though, that's, like, not depressing, Matt.
Well, and depressing as the episodes were, basically on a most list, the TV episodes of 2017.
The most list? You mean the best list?
On the best list. On the best list of, like, best TV episodes of 2017, both Times, Arrow, and Stupid Piece of Shit rank high on many of the media outlets, and both of those were nominated for 2 awards. For voice acting and just basically, like, production and design of, like, the show.
They're extremely good.
The Times, Arrow art and the music they play, just from, like, the, just even the drawing of, like, looks like stencil from, like, paint over faces is crazy.
It's so good, and, like, the way it, like, intertwines with, like, BoJack's narrative of, like, rebuilding that house and stuff, and just...
Oh, yeah, he goes through the whole... Yeah.
I forget the name of it.
It's insane.
There's an episode in the beginning of season 3 where he goes underwater to go to a premiere.
Oh, yeah!
That, too, is, like, that's one of the most artistic episodes by far, and it's not even because they do something different with the art itself. The entire episode practically is silent. And that, and just has this, like, really, I don't know what the word is, but the music in the background is just, like, the only thing you hear besides people gurgling because they can't talk underwater. And the whole episode is, like, the first half of it is BoJack trying so hard to do something right and to ask for somebody's forgiveness, or to at least apologize, not even ask for the forgiveness, and is rendered incapable because he is silenced by the water, and the whole episode is just, like, it's silent. And I rewatched that one specifically in the last 2 days because I remember that one particularly being just very, like, impactful and, like, really, really different, because aside from this one episode of the current Pokemon anime, I can't think of any really episodes of TV where it's entirely silent and just, like, dang, how do they draw so much emotion out without saying a word? It's really good.
Which is the best part at the end when you realize he just didn't turn on his communicator.
And it's ultimately the whole thing is a metaphor for the fact that, you know, if we don't know how to speak up even though we're capable of it. And 2 uplifting things. One of my favorite things that the show does, that's just, like, the little tiny comedy moments that are just, like, they're non-consequential, but almost every time, every episode, at least once or twice, there's just these little moments of, like, animal comedy where, like, the animals do something that is, like, very animal. And like, because they're all anthropomorphic and they don't act like animals most of the time. But then every once in a while, like the sardine gets into a really packed car of sardines, and like the like dog chases its tail, and it's just like the bird rat crashes into a window. It's like these really small moments of just like being funny that don't mean anything, but and you don't need them, but because they're there, you're just like, that's so nice. And second thing is that earlier, just want to point out, Adrian said doo-doo. And I thought that if I said that, we'd all just make things a little better.
I thought that too.
Just make things a little lighter.
Note to tie this up.
I mean, not like a fun note, but lighter than ending with dementia. I think.
Well, we had our final thoughts.
Yeah, and I'll just use this as like my final thought for the show. So I didn't talk a whole bunch. One, because I've never gone through. I mean, I don't know if I've got through. I don't know. Through like heavy depression and stuff, so I can't speak to a lot of those things. And a lot of the start of the episode was kind of like from the female's perspective, and I don't like talking about a female's perspective because I don't know what it is. But the thing I think I like most about this show is that no matter how much is going on and how every character is basically like not infallible, like there's something wrong with every single character, down to like Mr. Peanut Butter, who's supposed to be like this happy-go-lucky guy. I think there's moments of just like introspection and reflection, like on your own life. I'm thinking like of the events, like obviously like to the extreme or maybe not to the extreme that the characters go through. But I think there's like moments and opportunities for you to kind of just to like Todd says, like just do better no matter like what situations you're going in. So if you and look at one of these situations, you're like, oh man, I've gone through that. And then you just go on with your life. You're not like doing better. You're just basically doing what BoJack is doing and just like living that kind of like self deprecating, like, well, yeah, my life sucks, but if you're not doing anything about it. So I just really like listening to you guys like do your self-reflection, and knowing Kate specifically, like, Kate's killing it, man. Like, she hasn't let any of the stuff that she's talked about like hold her down and prevent her from doing all this really great stuff with the podcast, outside the podcast, having multiple podcasts and all this stuff. So I think no matter how much she self-identifies with the show BoJack Horseman, I think she's rising above like these things and these issues that BoJack goes through and like Carolyn goes through and stuff like that to be better. And I think that's when I watch, that's what I get out of it. Like, man, I don't want to be like that when I'm older. Maybe I should be doing better now.
So one quick thing, favorite scene.
Well, I want to say, Adrian, thank you for being so nice to me.
Hey, man.
You're supposed to be nice to people.
There's a reason why I call you the Captain, Kate. We wouldn't be here without you.
Favorite scene.
I think the Todd scene, really, because it's like you watch all this stuff with you know, BoJack trying to fix everything and doing all these one things, and he's basically just like, it's you, dude. Like, fix your stuff, man. Fix your stuff. So I think that's probably my favorite scene. And anything where Mr. Peanut Butter's acting like a dog. Because in the anthropomorphic like area, I like that part where Mr. Peanut Butter just acts like a literal dog, and I think it's cute.
It's so funny. He lives in a giant dog bed.
Yeah. I'm like, I am definitely with Jason and you on those moments, on that the animal moments are so damn good. So damn
good. They order milk at the...
Oh, God, we didn't even talk about the owl from the 80s.
Oh, my gosh.
That was BoJack's chance at romance.
Well, I thought about bringing it up because it's basically one of those people that try to go... They're going to date somebody that's happy-go-lucky to try to reverse everything.
Mm-hmm. Or try to go back... like, or try to relive the time that they had when they were happy.
It's okay, yeah. When BoJack's in like season 8, we'll come back for a part 2.
Like, yeah. She says, when you see life through rose-colored glasses, all the red flags just look like flags.
Yeah.
Yeah! And that's such a damn good thing. And it's, like, really good advice for somebody who is stuck in a coma in the 80s and hasn't been on the dating scene. Because I think that's how all of us start out dating, pretty much. Like, oh, these things are fine.
Why do we keep bringing up the 80s?
Yeah, I would like to formally apologize for the time when I said that back in the 80s I was a really big fan of BoJack, because the song literally says back in the 90s. I don't know why I said 80s.
Yeah.
But you're talking about the 80s because that's when she went into the coma.
I'm talking about the 80s because that's when the owl was in a coma.
Okay.
So my favorite scene... that can be my last thing. I think I've talked a lot this episode. But, like, my favorite scene is... when he, in the stupid piece of shit episode where he sits down and debates about eating the entire thing of Oreos.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Oh, I've done that so many times.
Because that is just way too damn real. And then, honestly, the entirety, and, like, my favorite episode is the Princess Carolyn episode, because... Oh my god, I feel it so much. I also think, like, if you haven't, and it, you don't have to, like, I'm not saying that everybody has been depressed. Like, no, not everybody has. Or, like not, you don't have to have had some of these messed up situations happen to you. But I think that they're, yeah. But I think, like, when you watch this show, I think the show, whether it's you're identifying it or you're seeing the pieces of society that they're critiquing, I think this show does a really good job of holding that mirror up to you. And making you look at these things, and like Adrian said, be self-reflexive in these moments, whether it's like your position in society and what's happening in the world, or if it's your own personal, or if you're seeing your own reflection in that. So,
did Jason give his?
No.
My favorite scene, I think, is the end of that underwater episode. The whole, like, second half of that episode, he helps a seahorse give birth on a bus, and then one of them clings onto him, and it's really darn cute because it's a seahorse and he's a land horse and it's a baby, and it's super cute, and the seahorse is drawn real cute, and then it gets a sugar high and does backflips, and it's so great. But then the very end of the episode, finally gets to, like, the baby seahorse's dad's house and returns it and is like, you know, all nonverbal, and he, like, Bojack really needs to get back to the city so that he can, like, apologize to the person he wants to apologize to, but he also is going through this almost uncharacteristic but also, like, so in his character moment of, like, no, like, he keeps refusing the person's help, where the dad keeps, like, offering him, like, come and eat dinner with us, you return my child, I want to repay you, let me give you some money so you can take a taxi, or, like, can I do anything for you? And Bojack literally is, like, with this face of, like, genuinely, like, no, like it's okay, I was just doing the right thing and I just wanted to make sure that I brought this kid home, like, refusing everything. It's like he genuinely is having this moment of, like, no, of course, I was just doing the right thing. And, like, he's never selfless like that, but you also know that he genuinely is this good person somewhere underneath, even though he questions it constantly and all of his friends tell him he's not. It's like, you know that he is. It's this moment where you realize almost that just, like, he is more than just his outer shell, and maybe the fact that he can't talk is letting him express it better than his words ever really could. And I just, and then he, like, has this really sad moment of where he waves bye to the kid and the kid doesn't even remember him in the first place, and he still is just like, no, I know I did what was right, and I'll take a taxi that I can't afford and be fine. And then his note disappears and it's just terribly sad.
Yeah.
It's like, You know that he has the capacity to be better, just has to figure out how, and, like, maybe go to therapy. That would probably help.
Favorite scenes when he's on the TV show, TV game show.
Oh gosh!
It spoke to me the most, and it attacked me in so many ways.
I know.
So which one was up there?
Daniel Radcliffe.
He was the one that was up there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he kept saying, for $50,000, can you name who I am, or will we watch all this money burn? And they just kept asking him, and they gave him one chance, and he said, you're Elijah Wood.
On purpose, just to be a jerk.
He burned all that on purpose, despite
him. Because he couldn't remember his name.
Even though he burned so much money.
It was all for charity. He
burned all that money. Yeah, all that money for charity.
It was just despite him. Because Daniel Radcliffe couldn't remember Bojack's name.
Yep.
I'm not surprised that that's your favorite moment, because I remember watching that with you and turning to you like, that's the most Matt thing Bojack has ever done.
He's so smug. He did it on. Yep. He did it completely on purpose. That wasn't even a moment of weakness. That was just because he wanted to be a jerk.
Nope.
Yep.
Didn't remember who he was. You're Elijah Wood.
Obviously.
Awesome. Well, thank you for tuning into this slightly depressing episode, but it was BoJack Horseman, so it was either going to be depressing, drunk, or both.
Mr. Peanut Butter's too good a friend. BoJack doesn't deserve him.
Accurate.
Mr. Peanut Butter's stupid.
But he just wants to give love.
He's a good boy.
But Mr. Peanut Butter does not deserve all the shit that people throw at him.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't.
He means so well. He's selfless. Just so good. No one deserves him.
But he's so stupid. No one deserves him.
Because he cares too much.
He's like a daddy.
Anyway. anyway, that's a whole, like, another side story of, but yeah. So, thank you so much, Jason, for coming on. Why don't you remind people where they can find you and your things?
Thanks for having me. I've been waiting for this episode since I watched the show. And was like, you should do an episode on this. It's a very important show.
It was already in the works.
Matt's been talking about this since he watched the damn show.
I know. Himself, that's what he's... He was like, I want to, but let's wait till the new season.
Timeliness and all
you
that.
You can find me online at Flatter, FLATTER _YOU on Twitter, where I sometimes will say funny things. You can also find me on RetroZap.com, writing about 80s movies and every Marvel comic ever written and video games.
And that's not it's a not hyperbole. He's really writing about every...
I'm currently in 1983, doing my darndest. And I used to have a podcast called Holy Star Wars, if you want to check it out. And that's fun times. It's not about religion. It's about Star Wars, though, and mythology and morality. And yeah, that's me.
As always, you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC. Please make sure, if you haven't already, to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcast, iTunes. It's like the best thing you can do for us as a show. Gets more people to us. And make sure that you check out our giveaway for 2 OP Live tickets. And I am Kate.
Thank you, Kate.
I don't know how to exit this because I forgot. You can... TV show.
That's the end. Those are the credits we rolled. Bye.
Oh, gosh. You find me at Oma with Randier. Adrian.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperEase93, SuperR. UIZ93. And if you need to pick me up after this very depressing episode, head over to Patreon and listen to our Little Prince episodes. A lot more happy, just in case you need like an
is
upper
it though?
I think so. I mean, it's cuter. We're not talking about dementia, so it's like automatically happier.
Yeah, it's automatically not Kate on the point exactly. Of tears. Matt,
you can find me on my giant yacht in the middle of the desert.
Oh my god. I forgot about that.
Back in the 90s, I was on a very famous TV show.